That when I was, I don't know if everybody even remembers this, when I was a young man deciding what to
still a young
career, corporate law or tax law, so I was very mitlabed, I was very uncertain, and I called my Rebbe and he said you got to go with what makes you happy, and I chose tax law, which as the Gilgal Hadvarim worked out enabled me to later on in life become a Rebbe. Had it gone the other way, it wouldn't have happened, so that's because of Rebbe's good advice, and it's a privilege to have Rav Azariah Berzon give us a shmooze.
Okay, thanks.
This one I'm giving to you personally because it's not on two sides of a page, so otherwise it gets a little confusing. Thank you, Shiva, and thanks to everyone for coming and giving me your attention. I don't know if I have enough copies, so hopefully if you don't have a copy, you'll look on, because what the chiddush of this musar is that I'd like to do a textual based and really go through sources. We're going to start with a piece from Moshe Feinstein, who's a Rosh Hashiva in Tiferes Yerushalayim, and to see how a Rosh Hashiva sees a parsha. It's very fascinating. The other chiddush here today is that I want to make a combination of musar and chassidus, so you'll get a little bit of a chassidus insight here. The topic for today is manhigus, which is leadership. And what are the qualities necessary, or the key quality for a leader? And I think we all play leadership roles, whether it's in our families, whether it's in our communities. Of course, the main leaders are the Gedolei Hador that teach us how to go. And also to focus on a midah, which Rav Moshe Feinstein identifies with leadership, called Tohar Lev, the purity of the heart. And one would think that purity is something that belongs to Hilchos Tumah Vetara, if somebody contaminates himself by coming in contact with the dead or with a sheretz or whatever it might be. But yet there's something called Tohar Halev. And there's a process of Tara which we have to undergo, which really makes our personalities and gives us the ability to teach, to influence, to play a role as leaders, as we said, in many different dimensions of our life. So, without further ado, the Drash Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, has a very fascinating insight. It's a diuk on the pasuk. It says, "Vizos chukas haTorah." Does anybody remember which parasha we're talking about? Vizos chukas haTorah. You're going to have a discussion about it in Megillah Daf Lamed. Are you up to Daf Lamed yet? Okay. Vizos chukas haTorah. Anybody? The subject of that parsha. Do you know what it is?
Pesach.
Paraduma. Excellent. Right, and we read it after? Before Pesach, but after? Purim. Right after Purim. The Shabbos after Purim, we read it in addition to the regular Seder, our parshas in the Torah. We also have a special reading of Parshas Parah at that time. But Rav Moshe is bothered by the language Zos Chukas HaTorah. The word Torah refers at face value to all of the Torah, and yet it should have said Zos Chukas HaPara, Zos Chukas HaTara. What's Zos Chukas HaTorah? Says Rav Moshe, this language seems to indicate that this is a chukah from which we can learn something about the entire Torah. And Rav Moshe says, "Lo nemar zos chukas hatara." It doesn't say that this is the way that you become tar from tamei mes. In Karban Pesach, it says zos chukas ha Pesach. And here's the breakthrough. He says, "V'nireshu lahoros." The teaching here is shekol haTorah hu b'derech zeshal parah. There's something inherent in the way para operates that's going to teach us about the entire Torah, and perhaps that how we should lead our lives. The purpose of Paraduma is Tahara, correct? Purification. He says, Shamitayar Tmeim Umitami Tahorin. There's something very strange, very paradoxical about the mechanism of the para. It plays two roles, and they seem to be mutually contradictory, mutually exclusive. On the one hand, the purpose of the para is to be Mitayar. On the other hand, the parah is metame. This is something that Shlomo HaMelech racked his brains. He couldn't figure out. The great paradox of paraduma. Says Rav Moshe, what message is the Torah conveying to us
inherent in the parsha of Parah in this very strange paradox. He says, "Hainu shebechol mida umida." How would you translate the word mida?
Characteristic.
Speak a little louder.
Characteristic.
Characteristic. Excellent. In every characteristic that we have, yochol v'tzorech lekayim mitzvah Hashem. The potential is inherent in every attribute, every characteristic that we have to fulfill great things, the mitzvah of Hashem. But at the same time, what's inherent in the very identical same midah? Chas v'shalom, la'avar al mitzvah Hashem. Do you see the dangerous game that we're playing with regard to every single characteristic? And that's why the paraduma is the paradigm, because inherent in the para, you have two opposite directions. On the one hand, it's mitaher. On the other hand, it's metamed. And that's true, that's reflective of every midah. The question is how we use the midos. How do we implement them? He says, v'hu, what it means is, v'chol eis, shetzorech, whenever it's necessary, whenever the situation creates a certain need, ye'anav, he should be humble. So he's talking about the midah of anava. What's the flip side of the midah of humility? Gaiva, right? Haughtiness or arrogance. And basically Rav Moshe says that if you isolate the midah per se, it could go in two directions. It could be used for greatness, that's called anava. But if you misuse it, it could lead to gaiva. And both are correct. Rav Moshe says we have to accept and validate both anava on the one hand and gaiva on the other hand. He says, "Sheyia onav al atzmo v'gaiva al chavero." Who could explain that, those words of the Rosh Hashiva? He should be an onav al atzmo, but a gaiva al chavero. What do you say?
He should be a gaiva in learning, meaning that he should always want to be a better learner, or better learner than the next person, so therefore than his friend, his chavrusa. So therefore, he'll always.
But should he show that externally? You know, I learned better than you? Is that what Rav Moshe is advocating?
Probably not.
No, probably not.
Maybe he's advocating that for yourself, you should be humble by yourself, thinking you're not necessarily the best. But for your friends, you should be proud of them. You should think you have the best of all friends.
Excellent. And look how Rav Moshe develops it. He says, "Hainu sheyizor me'od b'chvod chavero, v'yisbar shechavero tzarech lahakpid af al mashalo yichavdehu karoi." He says, when it comes to the kavod, the honor and the dignity of my friend, I have to protect that to such an extent that I have to ke'ilu put myself into his situation, imagining that he deserves all the kavod and all the respect that he should get. And his justification to be mocked, to be very careful, and object to anyone who might in any sense slight that person, diminish his kavod. V'nimtza, what it comes out is, sha'oved es Hashem, he serves Hashem b'midas ha'nava. And if when it comes to himself, his humility, he's self-effacing. He's eino makpid al kavod atzmo, he doesn't demand his own kavod. But however, when it comes to kavod chavero, all of a sudden, the midah of gaiva, let's imagine that this friend of mine is the greatest, that he deserves all the honor that you could possibly give him, and even more. Uvemidas gaiva shal kvod chavero makpin, and therefore he's very careful, demanding, so to speak, that honor and that glory, as if he were a bal gaiva, but again, not for himself, but for someone else. And Rav Moshe goes on to give another example where you can have a characteristic that could go one of two ways. It's either mitaher es atmeim or chas v'shalom mitame es atahorim. V'chein, he says, b'midas ha-pizoron. Does anybody know what characteristic is pizoron? The root of the word is fazer. Does anyone know lefazer means?
Spread out.
Correct, lefazer. Right? And what does it mean to spread out? To spread what out? Take a look in the language of Moshe. It's a dead giveaway. He says, V'cheinu b'midas ha-pizorn litztaka. When is it good to spread things around? What do you say? Yeah, when you're giving to others. Don't hoard it for yourself. Be a pazron. Be willing to share with others. But al shel chavero, when it comes to my relationship to my friend's possessions, to his bank account, yeah, counts on Beyoser. I should be very careful not to cause any loss to diminish his possessions. Actually, Yachshov, in my mind, it should be such that Gzelas Pruta, to even steal one Pruta here in this country, I guess maybe it would be a shekel, or maybe a half a shekel. Hu ki'ilu notel nafsho. The Gemara says in Bava Kama, hagozel shova pruta mechaveru malo of akosta ki'ilu notel es nafsho. When it comes to my moment, I'm not makpid on my moment. I'm a pazron. But when it comes to your moment, I have the opposite approach. And I become all of a sudden a kamtzan, and I'm careful about every last pruta. And that should be a general rule. An overriding rule of the Torah for our attitude towards everything. When it comes to me, I'm not makpid. I don't demand honor. I don't demand kavod. I'm not makpid. I'm an anav. When it comes to you, I have to be makpid. I have to be very careful. When it comes to my possessions, I should share them with others. Be very magnanimous and giving. But when it comes to you, I have to be careful that every last pruta. And this is the message, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's inherent in the parish of Paraduma. My friends, this is something that you should be amazed that to see the attitude, the approach, the perspective of a Rosh Hashiva, you know, who came from Litta, and he came from White Russia, and he said Shiurim on Tilei Tilim Shal Halachos. And he looks at a parasha of Paraduma, which is so complex and so paradoxical, that Shlomo Melch declares, Amarti Echma Virachokamedi. Shlomo, the great wise man, the greatest wise man of all time, says, I can't understand it. And Rav Moshe looks with another kind of perspective below the surface to see Zoskukas HaTorah. This tells us something about how we should live our lives. My father, Zichron Lefrocha, told me the following story. One of the great shining lights of the Musar movement about a century ago was Rav Itzla Blazer. He came from St. Petersburg. He was known as Rav Itzla from Petersburg, the Petersburg Ilu. He was a genius. He wrote pre Yitzchak and other works. And one of the Musar Shmuzim that he was given in his local town, he said that every single midah, every characteristic and every trait that God bestows upon you is a challenge that can be used either for positive or the opposite. Everything. So one smart aleck in the audience, I don't know how he had the chutzpah to say this, he said, Rebbe, and what about kfira? Denying God's existence, Chas V'Shalom, how can you use that for good? So immediately, without thinking, Rav Itzla said to him, that too can be used for good. If a poor person comes knocking on your door, don't say, you know, little Yiddish guys, God will help you. God will help you. There's no God. You have to help him. And that's where the meaning of fear itself can be used for something positive. As I said at the outset, I wanted to show you how there's a certain overlap between Musar and its approach, which belongs to one part of the world, and Hasidus and its approach that belongs to a whole different school of thought. And there's a sefer called Ma'ayan HaNitzchi on the same parasha, Parshas Chukas, and he quotes from the Chassidish Rebbe's in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Chassidus. The Baal Shem Tov used to say the following: every mitzvah in the Torah is nitzchiyut. What does that mean, nitzchiyut? No, netzach. What does netzach mean? Eternal. That means there's no such thing as a mitzvah in the Torah from the perspective of Chassidus that only applies during a specific time period in history. Every single mitzvah in the Torah has to apply always. So of course they asked him the question, how could that be? What about a mitzvah that requires Beis HaMikdash? And they gave him the example in the second paragraph. They asked him, what about the mitzvah of Paraduma? In our time, how could the mitzvah of Paraduma be relevant? What musar, perhaps, what message can we derive in our Avodas Hashem from the parsha of Paraduma? Heshiv lehem habesh, that's in the third paragraph, number two. Para, the cow, is a remez, is an allusion to gaiva. Right? Because para means something that's multitude, it's big, it's large, you know, full of itself. Miloshen pare v'ravet. He says, "Hagayva magdila es daito shalom." If a person has gaiva, he's full of himself. He says, "But yesh bachiyu v'gam shlila." What we have to understand is that this concept of gaiva has within it both positive and negative. He mitaheres tmeim umitames tahorim. Now, this is very different than what Rav Moshe Feinstein was saying, but there's a certain overlap, a certain ring of association, almost duplication, because what the Besh is saying is that there's a message inherent in the Paraduma that it works on two levels. It functions in the positive way and in the negative way. But he's focused on what? On Gaiva. Did you notice that? Whereas Rav Moshe is talking about using Anava and using Gaiva and integrating the two, knowing when to use which Midah. He's focused on Gaiva. Meaning, the premise of the Besht is that Gaiva itself, when a person thinks of himself as being superior, that itself could have a tzad chiyuvi, a positive dimension. And I ask myself the question, what does the Besht have in mind? With regard to what do I have the right to be proud? So you mentioned something beautiful before. What is your name?
Shlomo.
Shlomo. You mentioned Talmud Torah, right? I should strive to be the best that I possibly can in my Torah knowledge. I would suggest a little bit of a different approach. We all belong to one nation, the Jewish nation, which is called the Am Segula, the Am Hashem. What is our relationship to other nations of the world? And on the other hand, what is our relationship internally from one Jew to the other? And here's where I think the Baal Shem Tov's approach is a beautiful one. Gaiva can be positive or can be negative. If my question is, how do I relate to my fellow co-religionists, to members of the Jewish community, then gaiva is a very negative thing. You have to keep it outside. If I lord it over you, I pronounce myself superior to you, that's a very bad thing. But gaiva can be used in a positive way. When the Jewish people pump themselves up and feel superior to the other religions, if they're worthy, and we are the Am HaNivchar. This is a parsha that we read just yesterday in the Torah. Mi ki amcha Yisrael, goy echad baretz. We are a goy echad. There's something unique about this nation above and beyond all the other nations. And the pasuk tells you why. How? It says, Asher lo chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim. And it says, Asher Hashem karov eilenu b'chol kareinu eilav. We are special, we are unique in two dimensions. In tefillah, in prayer, that's bein adam l'makom. And also, in chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim. It's the Jewish people that understand the sensitivity and the social justice and the commitment to chesed, to bein adam. And, you know, in the light of Tisha B'Av, it just passed not long ago, a week ago. You know, we may pass Tisha B'Av with a sense of down. You know, the Jewish nation went through so much. It's almost as if Chas V'Sholom HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us to be mashpil us, you know, to lower us. And therefore, I think in the aftermath of Tisha B'Av, we have to generate within ourselves a sense of self-confidence to understand and appreciate who we are and what we are. Tovach Hartonu Mikol Ha'amin. That we are the Am Segula, we are the chosen people in the sense of responsibility, but it's also in the sense of that close Ava relationship between Hashem Echad and Goy Echad. And that's what I think the Baal Shem Tov might have in mind when he speaks about a positive kind of gaiva, using gaiva in a positive way.
What does he mean when he says, "Imitaheres tmeim mitame gaivas"? Sounds like someone who's a tame has a positive aspect.
Right, if you feel, I think, low about yourself, then gaiva could be mitahir. You need that gaiva when you're feeling a low sense of confidence, sense of self. Now, before we go on to see some more Torah on this very topic, I wanted to share with you an insight that I wanted to suggest in a very famous Chazal. You remember that Yoshua ben Nun's original name was what?
Hoshea.
And Hashem added a
Yud.
Where was that Yud taken from, say Chazal in the Medrash? From whose name? There was Sarai. Someone's name, correct. What was her name originally?
Sarai.
So the Yud, according to Chazal, comes up in front of the Kisei HaKavod with a complaint. Well, why should I be cut out? I was part of Sarai. So HaKadosh Baruch says, don't worry. In the future, not too far down the line in history, we'll take your Yud and we'll add it to the name Hoshea, become Yoshua. And Rashi at the beginning of Parashat Shlach says that the Yud was added to the name Hoshea to introduce, to inject the name of God, Yud Kei, Ka Yoshiacha Me'atzas Merag. God should protect you against the evil influence of the other Meragim, of course, with the exception of Kolib Ben Yifu. So the question I wanted to raise with you is, here's the Yud, on the one hand it's attached to the name Sarai, and on the other hand it becomes attached now to the name Hoshea to become Yoshua. Isn't there some sort of a strange game going on over here? It's so technical and mechanical. Is there perhaps a deeper meaning to the Yud of Sarai and her personality, and the Yud that's missing in this case, in the personality of Hoshea ben Nun, and has to be mashlim to complete his personality? And I think when we think about Sarai Imenu, we'll see something very fascinating. She represents really two contradictory midos, almost. On the one hand, she's the greatest Balas Chesed, together with Avram Avinu. Her Ohel, Chazal say, was open on all four sides, so the guests would come inside. We see when the Arabs pass by, at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, her Ohel is open. She's there working Lushi Vasiugos, overtime. That's Chesed, the meaning of giving, of benevolence. On the other hand, Sarai Imenu represents the exact opposite. Look, for example, in the case of Yishmael, Avram was a little taken aback when Sarah came forward and said, Garesh Asahum Azos. It says that she sees Yishmael as a mitzachek, get rid of him. And Avram didn't know how to handle this. He was pure chesed. But Sarah saw that there was also a need for a midah keneged chesed, what we call the midah of gvura, discipline. What was she afraid of in the case of Yishmael?
Influence
Yitzchak, correct. Yitzchak also comes from Lashon Tzchok. But Vayitzachek of Yishmael is the antithesis of the Tzchok of Yitzchak. And she says, Garesh, we got to get rid of him. She was absolutely unyielding, unbending, no flexibility whatsoever. The problem with Hoshea ben Nun, that's what Moshe foresaw, is that since he was such a flexible personality, we see this at the end of Parashas Pinchas, when Hashem says, choose Yoshua to replace you. It's because Yoshua is Isha Sharuach Kol Odom Bo. He's together with everyone. He tries to be giving to every single person around him. And such an individual whose midah is that of giving is in a very precarious situation. If he exposes himself to the influence of the meraglim, of the Eda Ra'a, Chas V'Shalom, he could be swept along, he could be sucked into the same attitude. And therefore Hashem takes the Yud of Sarai and attaches it to Hoshea ben Nun, to Yoshua, to give him a complete personality. Yes, Yoshua, be outgoing, reach out to everyone, care for every individual and his needs, but up to a certain point. At a certain point, when it comes to matters of principle, you have to be absolutely inflexible. There's no room for compromise. You have to stand up for that matters of principle. This is the, in a sense, the paradox of midos that we're talking about today. And this all relates to what a manik the Yisrael has to be. Let's skip for a moment to number 4, which is on the bottom of page 1. And this is the Aruch Laner. Again, we're looking at a first-class lamdan to see how he darshins on a medrash. The medrash says on the pasuk in Parshas Baaloscha, "Osfo li shivim ish." Now, ish is in the grammatical what? Singular or plural? Obviously, singular. But shivim indicates plural. So the Aruch Laner wants to understand, why doesn't it say shivim anoshim, why shivim ish? And the Torah wants to focus, he says, on the word ish. And to explain that, he quotes a medrash. The medrash says the following. Lo amar lo shivim anoshim el shivim ish. Ish means miyuchadim. Ish means singular. What does that mean, singular? Shiudomim li vilcha. There should be some similarity in the ish between me, says God, and you, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Hashem ish milchama. God is the God of war. V'ish Moshe anav biot. So the word ish refers to Hashem as the ish milchama. Here the vision is tough, going out there for a battle. But in the case of Moshe, is also called an ish. He's the anav miot. Says the Aruch HaNer, what is this Medrash trying to convey to us? My Inyan, what does it mean that these 70 elders, the leaders of the Jewish people, should be an Ish? Shiudomim li ulecha. He says the following, moving on to the left side, on the bottom of your page 4. He says this pasuk is teaching us about the midah of Tohar Lev. Tohar Lev is what a leader needs. Shelo yechdol v'lo yira mililchom milchemes torasa. When it comes to fighting the battle of Torah, he should be out there unwilling to yield or to compromise. He's ish like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ish milchama. However, there's a condition, and that is sheyira matan dvar. He should be very careful that when he presents his arguments to the people of Israel, they should understand, they should notice, she'ein kavanoso, his intention is not liskotet. He's not trying to fight against them, build himself up. Ki'im lahagdil ishuro, the fortune shaladoso of his people, ladricha mederech hatov. Umizeh mara atzmo shalo bedivrei gaiva medaber. He's not trying to lord it over them, limshol, to be moshel on them, to subjugate them, as an ish milchama who's got gaiva, but rather lachziram el haTorah, to bring them back to the Torah itself. Okay? Now here I want you to look at page 2, and we'll see how the Aruch HaNer takes this even a step further. This is all part of the same piece. He says, therefore, it doesn't say Asvali shivim anoshim kiim ish. Lo arshah menahel. I added an asterisk. I think menahel is the same as a manhig. Yeah, ish shemiyached atzmo shtei ha'inyonim. He combines, he integrates within his personality as a leader two diametrically opposed attributes. Leos domel Hashem. He should be the ish milchama, lilchom, to fight against oyvei Yisrael, the enemies of the Jewish people. This is very similar to, I think, what we were trying to convey before. Then our attitude towards protecting the Jewish people vis-a-vis the nations of the world, it's got to be Hashem ish milchama. But at the same time, ledavos gam leMoshe, ha'ish Moshe, the same word ish, is anav miot, shiudvarav binachas, the anova v'lo begaiva. When he speaks to the Jewish people, it should always be banova. Rashi says at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim that Moshe's musar to the Jewish people was out of a sense of anova, out of nachas. He didn't want to embarrass them and humiliate them. The oz, and if the leader reaches that level in his relationship to his edah, to his people, his flock, heim dvarim ayotzim en alev v'nichnosim el alev v'yusag tachlis milchamta. In other words, he's got to balance between the sense of milchama, to fight that battle, out of a conviction that this is a matter of principle, this is for the protection of the Jewish nation, but at the same time, as a leader vis-a-vis his people, he has to be warm, he has to be concerned. And that unique integration of a leader, of being both an ish milchama and an ish anav, Moshe's called the anav mikol ish, right? He's the ish in anava. That's what we have to strive for in our relationships with our fellow human beings.
Rabbi mentioned before that Shev Gaiva, it's like almost like stubbornness almost, you're learning. In a way, wouldn't that cause us not to be considered, like, cause the Israel not to be Ish, and that cause the Israel to be more separated because we have one side that won't, we'll not want to give over to the other side, and the other side will not want to give over to the other side, so you have friction?
Well, the Gemara does describe Chavrusa learning in terms of a little bit of a battle, right? But yet that battle has to come from a sense of mutual respect. So on the one hand, I'm going to tell you what I think is pshat in the Gemara. But on the other hand, I'm going to be respectful and listen with an open ear to what you express in your view of the Gemara. And I think that kind of mutual respect will engender a sense of love and unity amongst the people of Israel. So I think that's the ultimate goal of this manigut.
And the last thing, as all these Rabbanim who are trying to bring are all bringing from Moshe Rabbeinu. All giving examples of Moshe Rabbeinu. Isn't Moshe Rabbeinu a little bit of a bad example, maybe because in his time he was Moshe Rabbeinu and he was getting everything from Hashem. No one was going to argue with him in regards to that. And when somebody did argue with him, Hashem backed him up. So it wasn't like it was. He was arguing with Canaan. Like, for instance, when you argue with Korach, obviously, it was obviously who won because Korach wasn't there anymore. Or for all those instances. So isn't Moshe like a bad example? The Moshe is like almost considered that like not, he's not really even human, really.
Well, you know what? I think that you're right in one sense that Moshe really is an example. It's very hard to duplicate. But on the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu represents a concept. And I think what we're taking is the Ish Moshe out of Mikol Adam. We're taking that symbol, so to speak, what does Moshe Rabbeinu represent? What does he embody in his life? His relationship to the people. And that's what we have to inculcate and we have to assimilate into our personalities. But at the same time, we're an Ish in the sense of Hashem Ish Molchom. So we have those two categories and they have to somehow work in tandem and combine to form one whole personality. You know, Rabosai, that this week and last week we're celebrating what? All over the world. Siyum HaShas. Who is the one who created the idea of the Daf Yomi? So in his honor, I want to study a piece with you, a very fascinating insight of the Baal HaDaf Yomi to a parasha in Kitisa. And he says the following. Look at the pasuk. It's in Perek Lamed Gimel, Psukim Chaf Aleph and Chaf Beis. It says HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the kriya that we have for Sukkot. Hine Makom Iti. You're with me together. V'nitzavta Al Atzur. You're on top of the rock. V'haya Bavur Kvodi. But when my glory passes, God says, V'samticha B'nikras Atzur. You're now at the bottom of the tzur. Says Rabbi Shapiro, Hashem Yisbarach Hora Derech Lemani Gador. He's teaching how a person should be a leader. Hine Mokom Iti, when it comes to Iti, when it comes to the covenant of Hashem, when it comes to defending the honor and the glory of God and His Torah, then V'nitzavta Al Atzur. You're on top. You're on the apex. You're strong like a stone. Unyielding. You're fighting the battle of Torah for the sake of Hashem. Ulam, however, bavur kvodi, when it's no longer for the sake of God, and now we're dealing with your own personal life and your status and your honor within society, then the message is the exact opposite. V'samticha b'nikras hatzur. Run far away from kavod. Go all the way down to the bottom, and your midah should be that of an unav, of a humble person. So again, we're seeing the same side of tension between, on the one hand, the midah of Hashem Ish Molchom, on the top of the tzur, I'm not willing to budge, I'm inflexible, I'm unyielding. We saw Garish Esumazos, Eitan Kisela, I'm strong like a stone. But on the other hand, it should also be anava, when it's proper to respond with humility. When it's no longer Kvod Hashem, it's no longer Makom Iti, but it's Ba'avur Kvodi. My covenant has passed by. Now we're talking about Inyanim, Pratim, V'ishiv, personal matters in your personal life. You have to be a Vatran, you have to be willing to be flexible to give up and not to stand on your own covenant. Does anybody here know? I'm moving on to number six. I know I skipped number three. Maybe we'll get a chance to come back to that. But who is the Rosh Hashiva of Eitz Chaim Yeshiva in Yerushalayim? It's one of the oldest yeshivas in the yeshiva, in the old yeshiva of Yerushalayim.
Can I ask?
Who?
Can I ask?
Maybe you heard of Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. Now, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer had a very close relationship. He's like a Talmid Chaver of the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav was Rav Salve, my Rebbe's uncle, Rav Velbel, and he took over as the Rav of Brisk after his father passed away, Rav Chaim Brisk. Now, when Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer delivered a hesped, a eulogy, after the passing of the Brisker Rav, and this is all recorded by one of the Talmidim of Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky, he was one of the great Rosh Yeshiva and Dayanim in Yerushalayim. He lived in Beit Vagan, Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky. So he reports that in this hesped, Rabbi Zalman started talking about Rabbi Chaim. Now, when you give a eulogy, if you're good at it, I'm not talking about the professionals, but I'm saying if you're really good at the mitzvah of hesped, what you really are meant to do is to define the personality, to really touch on who this individual was, what were his essential qualities and characteristics, his midos, to depict the person in such a way that you can almost see him in front of you. And perhaps even for someone who doesn't know, he didn't know the person who passed on, but to get a picture, an insight into what his life was, what his legacy is. So at that hesped, Rav Isser Zalman, when he spoke about Rav Chaim Brisker, he says the following. He says, in the case of Rav Chaim, nobody who knew Rav Chaim could define his personality. Now, what does that mean? That sounds a little bit pejorative or negative. What do you mean you couldn't define and depict his characteristics? He says, we used to seeing a person and we classified him. He's either a Rachman or an Achzar. You know, we categorize him as either a compassionate person, or Chas V'Shalom, the opposite. He's very callous. He's keely. He's very stingy. Or nidiv, or he's very magnanimous with his money. He's a balkas. He gets angry, or he's a savlon, or he can tolerate people, etc., etc. When it comes to Rav Chaim, says Rav Isser Zalman, it's impossible to classify him. You cannot define his personality or his traits. Why? Because Rav Chaim is Torah. He was completely Torah. Everything that he did, every response to any situation that arose, was kulo al pi haTorah. And therefore, and I underline this point, b'chol rega v'rega, every moment, every occasion, b'chol inyan inyan, every response to whatever question arose, hoisa hanagosa kefi shaTorah mitzava achshav v'snahe. Would he be stingy or would he be magnanimous? Would he be angry or would he be flexible and tolerant? Would he be compassionate or would he be callous and cruel? What's the answer? There is no answer. It all depends on what? On the need of the hour. The Torah will teach you how to respond to the situation. And in one set of circumstances, you should respond this way, and the midah turns to the right. And another situation demands that you turn to the left, and the same midah should be used in a different way. Therefore, a true gadol b'Torah will never be classified in an absolute way as being X, Y, or Z. He's always flexible. He always uses his midos the way the Torah would want him to, and those midos can be used in both directions. As we said before, in the name of Mitzvah of Lazar, you can take any midah and use it either for good or in the opposite way. And perhaps in that light, we can understand, going back to number three, but I see we're running out of time, so I'll just wrap it up very quickly. The Torah at the beginning of Parshas Parah mentions both Moshe and Aaron. And all of the Farshim have this difficulty. Why does the Torah address this parsha to both Moshe and Aaron? The classical parsha in the Torah is addressed to whom?
Moshe.
And then Moshe is told to tell it over to Aaron and pass it on through the tradition, or pass it on to Klal Yisrael. So in Chassidus, Moshe and Aaron represent two opposite midos. It's really fascinating. And according to Chassidus, Moshe is called the Anav Mi'od Mikol Adam. always flexible, and yet Aaron is the exact opposite. He's called Hod V'Tiferes. Again, these are very deep and profound Hasidic concepts, but what it basically means is that Hod V'Tiferes is able to stand up for principles and work in that direction. And says the Be'er Moshe, this is what the Torah wants to convey in the parsha of Parah, that Parah can go two different ways. You should integrate within you both the Midah of Moshe and at the same time the Midah of Aaron. If you see towards the end, he says, "Lahachzik bebeis hamidos shal Moshe v'shal Aaron b'chol echad kefi eis hanitzrach l'kach." It depends what is the need of the hour. There's no absolute rule as to how to respond to any particular situation with one or the other particular midah. So as we end, this concept of Tara Lev means the Tara, which is inherent in the parasha Paraduma, means to take every single midah and place it into this purification. Make sure it's not too much gaiva, not too much anova, not to exaggerate in one direction or the other, always to see the great challenge and the potential of every single midah. Okay then? Stop
here. So I guess we'll talk about the Chassam Sofer some other time if we get a chance. Did you follow what I was saying? You look like you were paying attention.
I was trying to.
Okay, that's good. What about you? Did you get anything out of it?
I think so. Okay.
Oh, Shka, thank you so much. Shka. If you take a look at the Sugya Megillah, the language is very interesting. It says on Daf Lamed Bishlishis Para Duma Umaftirin Vizarakti Aleichem. So the Haftorah for Parshas Para is Vizarakti Aleichem. Actually, that pasuk Vizarakti Aleichem is not the kickoff of the Haftorah. It's somewhere in the middle of the Haftorah. But it's interesting that on the third of the four Parshios, which is called Para Duma, it says Ezu Yishav Shlishis Kol Shesmucha LePurim Me'achareha. It's right after Purim, and it's right after Purim. But what's the connection here between Para and Purim? After all, Para really belongs to the parsha of Korban Pesach, you know, to be mitire them so that they could bring the Korban Pesach. It's a little bit odd that Chazal went out of their way to connect the Parah Aduma to the parsha before it, namely to Purim that came before it. And perhaps this too is connected to our idea that somehow in the context of Purim, we're going to see this Toar Lev, which means to take the Midah and use it properly, both in this direction and in that direction, depending upon the need of the hour, and that same Midah could be used in both directions. We're going to see this in the personality of Mordechai, who at the beginning of the Megillah is described as someone who's a man of Ish Melchama, who's a man of principle. He's not willing to budge for the sake of the Kavodat Torah. And he's not going to be flexible, allowing any sort of lowering the standards. But on the other hand, at the end of the Megillah, despite the fact that he's reached that high level of being Gadol Bebeis HaMelech, I mean, he's now number two in command, and yet he's so willing, for the sake of his people, to be an Ish Shalom, a man of peace, to be an Anav, to reach out to everyone. And last but not least, if you look at number 7 on your page, the Chassam Sofer in one of his drushes in Parshas Noach, according to one Chazal, that there was some symbolism in the water that came down from heavens, the flood. It was Mayim, but yet it was Mayim Roschim, or at least Chamin. You know, what's the concept of the heat of the water coming from the Tahom, and yet it's water, it's Mayim, but it's hot, and it's
it's chamin. What is those two? And he points out that the concept of mayim is always related to tahara and always related to anova, because mayim is always pictured as going from a top, a high place, down to the lower place. And the Gemara in Tainis on Daf Zayin makes a big deal about mayim, that mayim is anova because menichim mokom gavoh veholchim lemokom namuch. The opposite of mayim, the opposite of anova, is Eish, which represents symbolically Gaiva. Eish is always shooting up higher and higher and higher. And somehow to combine, says the Chasam Sofer, and integrate both Mayim and Eish, which is called Mayim Chamin, that's the symbol of purification following the terrible generation of the flood. You know, the Tara that's achieved by the Mabul is the Tara of this double entendre, this very unique integration of what seems at the surface to be two opposite attributes. On one polar extreme, it's the mayim of anova. On the other extreme, it's the eish of gaiva that heats up the water and comes from deep down below the surface and goes higher and higher, as gaiva does. But somehow we have to be able to realize that these attributes are not negative versus positive. We have to realize that we have to integrate both together to form one whole. That's the challenge, and that's what it means, Tahara. So Yiratzon may be his will that we all dedicate ourselves to that tremendous task and challenge to integrate both midos. In this case, we're talking about Anov and Gaiva, but it really relates, as we've seen, to every single midah. And to understand that the Torah embodies and embraces all midos, every midah is neutral, so to speak, in and of itself, has the potential to be used, the Mirtz Hashem, for good, and not Chas V'Sholem, for the opposite, for bad.